Welcome to Victoria Rumble Room, an island show that likes to watch across the Salish Sea, across British Columbia, Canada, and the wide world for all the important issues out there and closer to home, but still off in the distance in Saanich is my co-host with the most, the Croatian sensation himself, John Jurisic. And Johnny, it appears that Kevin Falcon and BC United got some early coal in their Christmas stocking.
No kidding, Robin. This is really quite startling what's happening to that party. Such a big powerhouse party in this province for so many years.
As the BC Liberals.
Correct. Now struggling, the Abacus poll on the BC provincial scene is out and confirms this. Bad news for BC's official opposition heading towards the holidays. They're solidly in third place, barely above fourth place. You've really got to wonder if this isn't going to encourage Premier David Eby to press the election button even sooner in 2024.
You have to think he's awfully tempted, John. And, you know, if this poll holds, I think it's really going to be a very tough uphill swing for anybody to challenge the NDP. According to Abacus, their recent poll, the NDP in at 44% support. The BC Conservatives, those up-and-comers with only a couple of MLAs in the House, are at 26%. BC United, the once great BC Liberal Party, struggling at 17%. People still don't get the name change, and the Greens have also dropped a little bit, down to 9% support.
Sure looks like the BC Conservatives, whom, by the way, I don't know at all what they stand for, are benefiting from the growing popularity of Pierre Poilievre and the National Conservatives. They must be. Also, the rebranding of BC Liberals to BC United, clearly not working. It's ironic that Kevin Falcon has long been identified as a conservative leading politician. It was one of the negatives for him being a leader, that he was too conservative. But people aren't buying BC United. And the NDP must be gleeful.
Of course, everything can change, you know, in a matter of a few weeks in an election campaign. So we'll all have to see how public opinion shifts and turns. But I think the NDP has to be heartened. And housing remains the hot topic as far as Premier Eby is concerned. He has really taken this issue by the horns of the legislation, and he has pushed it through at the legislature. Basically, zoning and housing approvals are out of the hands of municipalities, into the hands of the province, fast-tracking construction for multiplexes, apartments, lower-cost housing. They've even announced they're going to go to more wood-frame buildings, go up to 12 stories of wood-frame structures. So watch this to be the top of the big issues right across the country. But in BC during this election year, watch for it to be number one. It'll be ahead of crime and homelessness, which are still crucial, and of course, our struggling healthcare system. And you know, I asked Mark Mielke, the analyst, who's from the Aristotle think tank, about the roots of the housing crisis. And this is what he had to say.
Look, housing unaffordability is a huge problem in much of Canada, and there's a reason for that. And it's because absurdly low interest rates for 20 years, you know, that caused a property boom. At the same time, you've got massive in-migration, and I'm pro-immigrant, but you can't have a million people, or more than a million people, including 900,000 students come into the country every year, and not be able to build fast enough. So you've got a number of problems happening in housing, which, you know, I think one of them is you probably need just fewer students in every year with respect into the country. So, you know, you can find housing for the people, you know, who need it now and are already here. So I don't think there's any easy answer to this problem. But again, every age has its challenges. When you and I grew up in the 1980s, I remember the early 1980s recession with 14% unemployment. There's no golden age in the history of Canada, and each generation will face its challenges. You know, but I sympathize with people in places like Victoria or Vancouver or Toronto that can't afford a place to live. It's pretty expensive. So I think we're going to have to look at both issues of demand on the migration side coming in and on the supply side. You have to tackle both of these to get to more affordable housing.
Certainly, I understand that foreign students, they symbolize a lot of revenue for our universities and colleges because they pay top tuition fees to come to Canada and study. So it would be a big problem for universities and colleges in terms of their balancing their books and running their operations if they didn't have foreign students. But the foreign students are living tough. A lot of them, I hear, are living in trailers and even in vans. It's tough, and they're fighting for spaces to live along with our domestic students. And it's a bad situation overall in Canada right now for younger people to find homes, to build their lives. And, you know, we really need solutions, and we need them now. But Johnny, let's turn from housing now. Let's move to something else that's also important, especially this time of the year, transportation and, you know, air transport. Let's get into that.
Absolutely, we will. But can't emphasize enough the need for solutions of any kind. I mean, we're just starving. Our population is starving for solutions, and there aren't any. So who knows how that's going to transpire in the brand new year. But certainly in the skies, we know how it's going to transport, because we had a chat with Victoria International Airport's new top executive. Since her arrival in September, Elizabeth Brown has worked hard to build a stronger, better facility here in Victoria as airlines and fly and air operations recover from the pandemic. Sounds like I need to recover from the pandemic. Let's now fly her to the friendly skies and zoom her in.
Now, joining us in the Victoria Rumble Room for the very first time is the brand new CEO and president of the Victoria Airport Authority, Elizabeth Brown. Great to have you on the program.
Oh, I'm very happy to be here. Nice to meet both you and John for this podcast. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, we have so many questions, so this is great. It's a great time of the year to ask, too. You've been on the job for, what, about nearly 4 months' time here, and it's one of the busiest times of the year at the airport, I suspect. So first question out of the shot is, how's business? I know under Jeff Dixon's watch, before the pandemic, they're up to about 2 million travelers a year. Are we anywhere close to that now?
We're getting pretty close to that. You know, I started the middle of September, and I landed into, you know, a pretty strong airport environment with really good recovery. I think we'll clear 2 million hopefully in the next year or so, but we're still a little bit behind from where we were pre-pandemic. But it's typical of airports across Canada and certainly, you know, around the world. That's what's all been a little bit slow to recover, but we're getting there.
Well, that's fabulous. Elizabeth, welcome home.
Thank you.
I understand you left the island about 16 years ago.
Yeah.
And have worked in different capacities for airport operations in Orlando, San Diego, Montego Bay, and sunny Jamaica. Mm-hmm. So how does it feel coming back to work in a Canadian environment? Is it all pretty familiar, or has there been an adjustment period for this new job you're doing?
No, there is certainly a little bit of an adjustment. You know, the airport system that we have here in Canada is quite a bit different than the airport system in the United States. In the United States, most of the airports have some involvement of government, whether it's at the municipal level or at the federal level. There's a lot of government grants and monies that are passed forward into the aviation system. Whereas here is not-for-profit corporate entities here. We are really fiscally responsible for our own, airport environment, airport operations. There is an airport improvement fee, obviously, for passengers, but for the most part, we really need to be fiscally responsible. So it is a different aviation environment, less government influence, so to speak, that way. So there's a bit of a difference there. But it's, you know, for me, this is my dream job. This is when I left 16 years ago, I only had this little hope that I didn't even want to entertain very strongly that I might be able to come back and work at this airport, much less as CEO. So I felt like I went off to go and get some experience, and I hope that now I can come back to Victoria and really take that experience and you know, put some fresh eyes on this airport and continue its advancement, you know, into the future to support this community.
That's what we all want to see. You know, Elizabeth, I'm also readjusting to being back in Victoria. My wife and I left for about 8 years. We went to Vancouver, where we enjoyed the benefits of a bigger airport, a lot of direct flights to and from Canada, the United States, Europe, Asia. It was a pleasure to have all those choices and options of airplanes and airports that you could fly direct to. And we really don't take that for granted now that we're back on the island, where we have so many more connections you have to make. And what we've been noticing post-pandemic is it seems that the airlines are still adjusting in terms of crew allocations. We've had a couple of connection flights canceled at the last minute because they said they didn't have crews for the planes. And that's a terrible problem when you're trying to make connections, especially for longer flights. So what are the airlines telling you at the airport now about their staffing woes? And in your mind, at least, are things improving?
Absolutely, things are improving. And it's, you know, it's not unique to Canada. It's really in North America. There is a definite pilot shortage and crew shortage. And a lot of that came through the pandemic with a lot of furloughs, a lot of early retirements. But that was really, you know, a problem that was compounded by the pandemic. It was something that we were starting to see pre-pandemic. Certainly that is impacting the airlines. And it's not just crewing, it's also aircraft supply. We all feel it in our daily lives as supply chain challenges. I just moved back. I ordered a couch. It's going to take me 6 months to get the couch, you know. So those things are happening, you know, at all levels of the industry that's really causing some delays. But I would also say coming out of the pandemic, the airlines have become a lot more nimble. You know, they are, you know, they are much more flexible in terms of their schedules, and they're working really hard to deliver on the expectations of the passengers. So they are, you know, putting in services and routes with a consistent schedule, and they're trying to make sure that they can honor that schedule. I remember reading in Florida and reading about the challenges that we saw a couple of summers ago, and certainly through the winter travel where there were a lot of cancellations. I think the airlines have gone through that. I think that the recovery and the demand was stronger than maybe the airlines were ready to take on coming out of the pandemic. And now they've got their feet under them, and they are able to deliver on the schedules that they've put forward. I think that we'll continue to see that strength going forward. We're already starting to see indications of some airline growth for Victoria coming up in 2024. And I think that speaks to the fact that the airlines now are in a better position than they were a couple of years ago coming out of the pandemic.
Elizabeth, great segue to my question. years ago, 10-ish, I was the manager of an advocacy group on the peninsula called the Sydney North Saanich Industrial Group, and advocacy around helping some of the manufacturers, many of whom were on sort of the periphery or on airport land, Scotty Plastics, Viking Air, Seastar Chemicals, etc. So very familiar with not only is there an airport, but there's a ton of other stuff going on with airport land. And it's exciting to see so much of that positive activity. You're like a huge economic development driver for the region. There are now distribution centers for Amazon and Sobeys, a construction of a new airport hotel near the Papé Highway. So can you talk, please, about the overall airport experience? Is it being improved? And what is your vision for future airport development? What does that look like, please?
Well, you know, I really see the development in terms of two areas. One is the land development and meeting the needs of the community and taking advantage of the valuable industrial lands that we have in the area to see the growth of business, which I think is important for the overall community. And the other one is also the passenger experience within the terminal building. So let's just start with that. You know, through the pandemic, we saw some closures of some locations. Most people would know the sit-down restaurant that's in the pre-security area was closed. But there, you know, the airport was able to take some time to look at master planning and what is it that will be the needs for the future growth of this airport, and have taken a look at the systems. And some of the systems you don't see, it's baggage handling systems, things that are on the airfield, to make sure that we're taking care of this asset and that we are improving the delivery of those services. So you'll really see us focus on that in the next couple of years to make sure that we're serving those needs. But also, and this really speaks to a lot of my background, and I think something that the board of directors was looking for, is the commercial development and maximizing those revenue opportunities, but also making sure that they're delivering on the service to the passengers, specifically in food and beverage. Spinnaker's has recently expanded. They just expanded in the post-security location a couple of weeks ago, and have also extended their hours. So that's going to serve the traveling public. We've identified some needs from additional food and beverage services that would be in the upstairs hold room where you see our bridges with the jets that are being served from WestJet and Air Canada and now the new Porter Airlines. And so we're looking towards how we can maximize those commercial opportunities to make sure that, you know, when you and I are traveling on a 7 a.m. flight going to Vancouver, we can, you know, get a cup of coffee and some breakfast before we head over. But also, I think there's an opportunity to expand the sense of place that we have on the terminal building to really take advantage of all these wonderful things that we have on the West Coast, make sure that from a retail perspective, those items are available for purchase for international visitors who want to have a taste of the Victoria and Vancouver Island before they head home. But also to make sure we have representation of our First Nations. As you're probably aware, we sit on the Wasanich Nations. There's four bands. We sit, you know, the airport sits on their traditional lands. And my focus really is to how can we incorporate more First Nations presence throughout the terminal building and take advantage of that for our passengers so that they can also see that proud heritage that we have. From a land development perspective, you know, we really want to focus on our partner that's developing the hotel, as you mentioned, on the Pat Bay Highway. That hotel will be really important for a number of reasons. One is it's going to be short term, but also an extended stay hotel. So people who are project managers, people who are coming over here to do business will have an opportunity to stay on the peninsula for a longer period of time. It's also a good signal for airlines. You know, when airlines look at the potential of basing an aircraft or moving frequencies of flights, they need to have a place for their crews. And so having a hotel so close to the airport is going and in, you know, increasing the inventory that are in this is in the Sydney area will be really important message that we send to those airlines as they look at potential increases of services or additional routes that they want to add into the Victoria market.
You know, I mentioned the idea of direct flights, which I enjoyed in Vancouver, and I see there are now more direct flights coming out of Victoria Airport, and some big news. Some direct flights have been ongoing to Toronto and Puerto Vallarta. We have WestJet and Air Canada increasing their regular flights, or sometimes twice weekly, but they're increasing the number of places they're flying to directly, which is a big plus. And now we have Porter Airlines flying direct Victoria to Toronto. Perhaps you could touch on the WestJet and Air Canada flights, which we've heard there's been sort of a reorg going on with those airlines about where they want to fly across the country and where they're going to concentrate those flights and how that is affecting flights in Victoria. And maybe touch on Porter Air and how that is helping to pick up some of the slack in terms of regular flights across the country.
Well, you've done a great job. Clearly, you know lots about air service because you've actually said exactly that. Porter has stepped into the market. I think they're meeting the needs of the Victoria market for the Toronto service and filling in some gaps that we saw coming out of the pandemic. There is strong demand out of Victoria to get to the east for connectivity, whether you might be going to Europe or going to the United States or really just being in the Toronto area. It's a very, very strong and a very important route for us. And both WestJet and Porter and Air Canada are all serving that route now and getting closer to the demand that I think that we have for that market. Porter you know, operates a very unique service. It gives us some more competition on that route, which is good. It keeps the airfares fair for the Victoria market. And also, I think we'll see Porter grow in the future. I think the route has been performing very well for us and for them. And I think we'll see them grow those services and possibly add some other destinations in the future, hopefully next year. I think WestJet is an interesting, you know, WestJet's going through a lot of changes themselves. They have folded their low-cost carrier Swoop. And so we're still, and we've seen a loss of services as a result of that, just because Swoop is not operating as a brand. And I think WestJet will continue to adjust what they need to do to serve the Victoria market in the future, given now that the Swoop aircraft will start to be incorporated into the main line of WestJet services. But also don't forget they've also taken over Sunwing. So, you know, we're talking to WestJet, we're trying to find out what their strategies will be going forward as it relates to Victoria. And I think that they see that there's some great opportunity. Likewise, Air Canada has done some changes as well. You know, we've seen some changes with the Calgary route, but they're still flying the Toronto route. And, you know, Victoria is still an important market for them, both getting us to Vancouver for the great connectivity, but also getting us to Toronto. I think Air Canada is, you know, looking at a lot of their long-haul routes. And, you know, do we have a sufficient market out of Victoria to support some of those really long-haul routes? Maybe not. So it remains to see how both WestJet and Air Canada look at the Victorian market. I think also we'll start to see more nonstop services. As you mentioned, we do have some sunspots. So this winter we have Las Vegas, we have Cancun and Puerto Vallarta. Yeah, and if I have one message to deliver to the Victoria community, support those services. fly the nonstop services when we have them, because that sends a strong message to the airlines, any airline that we're talking to, that there's demand here in the Victoria market for those routes and that they will be successful. At the end of the line, and the end of the day, the airline wants to make money out of our market, and we need to support those services, you know, to the best extent that we can. You know, and let's not forget some of the transborder services. We have Alaska Airlines that has come back now after the pandemic. They are now up to 2 flights a day to Seattle, and we are going to see them go to 3 and 4 flights a day next year in 2024. And I think that is outstanding for us. While we are missing some of the nonstop flights into California, that Seattle connectivity is really important to us. And they've now taken over Hawaiian Airlines. And so we will have an opportunity to get to Hawaii out of Seattle. I think that'll be great for us. I think in the future, though, we are really focused on trying to regain some of those services that we lost prior to the pandemic. And certainly, California serving our tech community is a top priority in terms of air service development. And it is also for the Greater Destination Victoria tourism folks as well. I've been in lots of conversations with their CEO, Paul Nursey, just to understand where they're focused their efforts from an inbound tourism development perspective, and also how we can align that with the business community who are focused on the outbound. We always think about, you know, where we want to go ourselves, but there's also a tourism market that we need to make sure that we're serving as well. Victoria is an outstanding tourism destination, and how can we maximize those opportunities? And working together with our tourism community and our economic development and business community will be really essential for us to grow back those services that I know the Victoria community is so eagerly looking to see return to Victoria Airport.
Elizabeth, I had a final question, which you kind of answered.
Oh,
Actually,
sorry.
more than kind of answered. Oh, no, don't be sorry. That was fabulous. It was just a wonderful. So let's maybe just sort of dig a little. First of all, Jeff Dixon, CEO of the airport, president for 12 years, saw dramatic changes at YYJ. Of course, we interviewed him a couple times and had some great stories to tell. Maybe one day we'll tell our viewers what actually happened during those interviews. Nonetheless, change is always a part of operation like yours. And the question here, which you might have already answered, but nonetheless, here, let's ask it directly. Does Victoria have enough traffic and size to warrant the growth that you indicated and potentially a growth that's planned for the future?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's important that we can serve the nonstop demands from a route perspective. We have a vibrant population, a strong business community that can serve those services. We're not Vancouver International Airport. We're not looking to be Vancouver International Airport, but we are looking to serve the needs of the Vancouver Island community and make sure that they can support the nonstop services that we need here. And I think, you know, our aspirations should be realistic. You know, are we looking for nonstop flights to China or nonstop flights to Europe? Perhaps not. But we are looking to make sure that we can get into those short-haul markets, particularly California, Washington, perhaps back into Colorado, into Denver, which I think is going to be really important to us. And then also to serve those sunspot destinations. Lovely weather that we have here in Victoria. Nice and green here year-round, but it is nice to go and find our sunspots, you know, and take our vacation. And I think we absolutely have that market for that. Infrastructure-wise, we absolutely do. We certainly have a comfortable infrastructure here to support, you know, 3 million passengers. I think there's some fine-tuning that we need to do within the terminal building to make sure that we're responsive to the needs of our traveling passengers. And I think there's going to be some investment that will happen. We're certainly looking at, you know, some investment on the runway and the airfield infrastructure in 2024. And we're starting to look towards what is that master plan? What is it that we're looking in terms of 5 and 10 years? Airports are capital intensive, and we have to look at a very long-term planning cycle. So we're really starting to turn our attention to what is it that we're going to need in the terminal building to meet the needs of not only the needs of the traffic, but also the changing needs of the airlines and their aircraft.
Great to hear from a fresh face at the helm of our airport authority. I think Elizabeth Brown's going to do a fantastic job. And goodness knows, there's lots of big potential out there. After we talked to her offline, we discussed for a minute or two the possibility of lengthening the runway at YYJ. And of course, this was something that was discussed at YYJ when she was here 16 years ago. It's been a discussion for over 20 years. If we had a longer runway, we could have bigger planes and they can go longer distances and maybe there's more opportunities. And she says this is still being looked at, still being discussed. Possibilities of this taking place are still real, so we'll watch that with interest as well as other developments, and we'll have Elizabeth Brown on. You bet we'll have her on again in the near future. And with that, Johnny, time to wrap up another show.
Robin, it's great to wrap up another Rumble Room, but man, it overwhelms me how much stuff we have to talk about all the time. And I think there'll be even more things to talk about in 2024. Anyway, sorry to see Jeff Dixon retire at the airport. Rumble Room has had a lot of fun with him over the years, but now having met Elizabeth Brown, and kind of feels like YYJ is in outstanding hands. I'm really excited about what's ahead for the Victoria International Airport. Excited as well about the over 1.5 million views since we started the Rumble Room 2.5 years ago. Ka-ching, exactly. We really appreciate everyone for their viewership, for their comments, for spreading the word around. And of course, you can do that when you're hanging around the dinner table over the holidays. So do think about spreading the Rumble Room amongst everyone you know, especially the Facebook page, the X page, the YouTube page. And now we have a podcast page. So instead of having to view us, you can actually listen to us. And there's the address below. And we also are on TikTok and Instagram. So we're everywhere. We are all over your internet universe. And for now, I remain your on-air sky pilot, the ace of video podcasting. I'm Johnny Jurisic.
And you know, Johnny, as I'm also revving up my engine and looking forward to the weeks ahead and the great stories that we're going to unveil, I can't tell you how much I enjoy getting to full flight with you every week as we rev up that engine and rumble on.
That's crazy.